Farming from field to fork, having control over your market can be a challenge. But Justina and Liam Gavin, farmers in Roscommon who own 300 acres, have found a way to make it work. Here they explain what they have done, how they make it financially work, and how they work with nature to produce food.
Yeah, so where we are now, we're on the home farm, which I would have inherited from my uncle, and that would have been around 40 acres. And we gradually extended that to approximately 150 acres over the last 10 or 12 years. We acquired another farm, more of a farmy farm in Roscommon, near Roscommon town, 4 Mile House, and that's more like a beef farm. On the farm here, we have mostly suckler cows here because the land is a heavy clay soil. So I keep most of the cows here. We have about 200 laying hens that we rotate around the farm. We have market garden then as well, which is about 900 square meters of tunnels, and then about a half acre of outdoor growing space for salads for the restaurants and the little farm shops that are attached to the restaurants. We have a small number of sheep, but we tend to, if we need lamb, we will deal with local organic farmers for that. We're looking into some agroforestry at the moment. So I have contacted a couple of people and consultants. And so we're looking to see, get an assessment of the land to see what might work for us in this particular kind of environment here. On the other farm, as I said, it's mostly beef, finishing beef. We do have about 10 acres of organic oats, and which we use ourselves. And we have around, I think this year we'll have around 17 acres of red clover silage, and we're going to try 10 acres of the mixed sort of species grass that might go in where the oats were. So that's kind of I'm mostly on the kind of production side, and I also operate we have a bakery, primarily an organic bakery. So we have a lot of products that are certified organic, and I would supply Justina's restaurants with
It's very hard to deal with.
with the bakery products and with the products from the farm. Kind of that's my side of it, and we also have a production kitchen as well. And that supplies the restaurants with other things like the sauces and the chips and things like that to support the restaurants.
There's quite a lot there, and I'm not too sure why you didn't just stop at like hens or something, but it's amazing
Either
how you have
way.
rippled out. I'm sure there's always new ideas brewing, which is great. Obviously it takes us to all the seasons, would take us nearly too long, but it's springtime now, so can you give us an idea of what's kind of happening on your farm now with your livestock, with your animals? Do you have people working for you? Do you have woofers on your land?
I have a part-time sort of livestock guy who comes in for a couple of hours each evening, and he takes care of the bedding and the feeding if there's anything to be done, and organizes the cattle and if there's anything to do with the sheep. On the polytunnel side, we have someone who's employed more or less full time, and so she will be joined by somebody, at least one person next week, and then a second person, and just when the growing season kicks off. So the tunnels now are the sort of it's all kind of happening out there. So the plan is there, and it's just we need a bit more help to get that organized. Yeah, the calving is I have a late calving. So because we supply ourselves, we can be, we can plan our own calving. So I do a really tight calving, sort of 4 to 5 weeks maximum if I can, and that started about a week ago. But I only have about 20 calvings this year, and on the other farm, just purely for acre scheme, we will have about 12 or 14 calvings over there. So I have the cows up near the house when they're calving, and I have them on camera, so we kind of keep an eye on things there. So yeah, we're pretty vigilant on that side of things.
You have a good maternity ward on site. Tell me, with the feed that you're producing, you were talking about your red clover silage, and then the oats. Are the oats, sorry, for your bakery, or are they for feed?
Yeah,
Or and
so
how do you feed your animals, or are you reliant on the outside feed coming in?
So yeah, no, we don't buy in any feed other than the organic layer pellets for the hens. So we find that they kind of need that kind of ration that has everything they need to keep them laying. That's really important. But we do supplement those rations with our own organic oats. So every day we make sure that they have maybe 20% of what they get in feed is made up of our own organic oats. And
And they're also out on grass, obviously, as well. So they're
they're actually properly free range.
yeah.
So the tunnel moves around, and then the hens are always out unless it's raining. So that works quite well. So that's the kind of the feed. We do feed the cows. We just give them a little bit of organic oats. We try and feed the cows hay. That's my preference. Nothing scientific about it. So I much rather keep the cows clean, and so they're all dry bedded. They're all deep bedded in straw. There's no, we don't have slats, and I find that the hay keeps them really clean, really warm. And so we top them up a little bit. We just give them a little bit of oats just throughout the winter and as they're coming up to calving, and we find that works really well.
That is one of the stipulations. I can't remember if Lee mentioned it, but we're both farms are certified organic with the Organic Trust. And one of the kind of organic regulations around animal welfare is that thing around housing, the amount of space the animals have, but also that they have these dry laybacks in the sheds rather than kind of being on slats. What percentage of slats is
50, the kind of the organic standard is 50%, but ours is 100%. So we just designed all our housing. They're all timber framed housing. They're all dry bedded, and they have a design so that there's a deep bed at the back, and we have fiber cement sheeting on the roof, so we don't have any condensation, and we have never had any incidents of pneumonia on our home farm here.
interesting. And you're obviously not using any antibiotics, preventatives, or anything because of your organic system.
I'll just on that one,
Yeah, sorry.
just to clear that up, because I think it is a question that a lot of people have, that if you are organic, it doesn't mean that you can't treat your animals. It just means that you treat them according to what's actually required by either the vet or if it's part of your animal health plan. So for sheep, for example, you might say that you have a routine dosing pattern for fluke, for example. So you're not prevented from treating your animals, but it is very it's recorded, and your withdrawal periods are observed, and it's twice the withdrawal period, or three times depending on the amount of time for organic standards.
Interesting, yeah. And tell me, obviously, at the moment, it's a huge challenge for farmers in terms of the weather. How do you feel on your farm that you've kind of adapted to or mitigated for, I mean, current situation, the weather now, and then in general, if there's, changes to the weather patterns?
Well, I suppose that's I did the, I mentioned the agroforestry side of things. So now we've only been on the like my family have had this farm for a long time, but we've been farming it for about 12 years. And yeah, I suppose it's hard to say, oh, it's a massive difference, but I feel it and I know what's happening, and it's kind of obvious. Every month a new record is set, and it's all very gloomy, that side of things. But all we can do is what we can do ourselves, and so that's why I'm looking into the agroforestry. So if there's areas, say, on the farm that I kind of think that are a little bit wet or a bit heavier, then maybe that's an ideal place to plant. So we're looking at the native trees for that, and not the kind of coniferous trees, but the sort of more like kind of the oak type
Leaves.
trees, or broadleaves, or alder, that type of thing. So we're looking into that, and I think that hopefully will, it'll be something anyway. And so pretty much that's and the calving pattern, I've pushed it out later and later. And the same with the sheep. So I don't have any sheep, but we're trying to make sure that the weather is good. So when I'm calving now, my calves will go out the same day. Or if it's really bad weather, they'll go out the next day. So there's no kind of calves hanging around sheds or anything like that. So I suppose that's what we do.
Also the breed itself. So we're doing Dexters. So it's a herd of pedigree Dexters, and they're small animals. They're gentle on the land, And part of that choice, A, just because we really like the breed and wanted to be promoting a native Irish breed, but also because they are gentle on the land, and this land, especially here on the home farm, it is naturally wet anyway, even without what's happening at the moment. It's slopey, it's fairly rough ground, but they are they're great in this kind of environment. You know, they're well adapted to it, and they're lightweight as well, so they're very gentle.
You're on the edge of a lake, Lock Key, but you also have a lot of different habitats on your land. Can you take us through some of the habitats or and some of the actions that you've specifically done for nature on your land?
We are on the lake. We border the lake, so we have hundreds of meters of lake shore. So years ago, we put a boundary between ourselves and the lake, and the water, and that might be 30 or 40, 30 meters, you know, to 15 meters, and so the cattle don't have access to the lake, and we have designed it in such a way that along the shore we've got a wildlife corridor, if you like, or that's the corridor that the wildlife use anyway. And so we're overrun with fallow deer here at the moment, for example. So they kind of happily kind of, well, they're also in the fields as well, but they're able to kind of meander down along the lake and go from place to place along our farm. So, you know, a lot of is on this farm is not what we've done, but what we haven't done. So we haven't disturbed any of the hedgerows, for example. We've got very old hedgerows here, so we preserved all of those. We have ring forts, which we preserved and fenced them off. We've actually planted quite a few, I suppose, native hedges where we thought they were kind of missing. So we've introduced a good few plants on that side of things. So that's kind of what we do on that side of it. Is there anything I'm missing?
No, just that. So we have very old pasture here. Like, we think Liam's family have been farming here going back, I think, nearly to the 1600s.
Wow.
So, you know, Liam has kind of preserved those old pastures as well. So there would be naturally occurring kind of multi-species swards here in the fields.
Yeah, we're kind of reluctant to do kind of big, you know, the whole Chagas reseeding programs that like a lot of people have done over the last kind of 20 years. So when the hens have been on the land, then we would kind of try to put in clover or some of the other grasses just to kind of boost it up and refresh it.
And there's a lot of native tree cover here already, as Lynn says, that we've preserved. So we've got a really lovely kind of ancient woodlands just abutting the lake here that I'm looking at out the window here. And that would be all, you know, broadleaf trees, native trees. So there's an amazing abundance of kind of bird and insect life here, which is lovely to see.
Yeah, I can imagine. You've got a massive diversity within the farm. But then you obviously have massive diversity in terms of your food production and then getting to the consumer. You might just take us through when it leaves the farm, how many different directions does it go, and what does this look like for you?
The kind of idea behind the project was about producing food locally, selling that direct to our local community. So it was about keeping food miles as low as we possibly could. So in relation to the products that are coming from our farm, so all of Liam's beef, all of the salads we grow here, they all are only supplied into our two restaurants. So the beef goes from here, the cattle go from here in a trailer up to a small family butcher up in Grange, just outside Sligo. It's about a 45-minute journey. They come back in the fridge van, ready to supply into the restaurants. So but it's very small, like Liam sending one, sometimes two animals a week to the abattoir butchery. They have a very short journey. It's just them in the trailer. They arrive there. It's a very small, very respectful kind of environment. There's not big crowds of animals kind of being pushed off trucks in that kind of factory environment. And then they're processed and they come back. And we have a storage facility, which is halfway between the two restaurants in Castle Baldwin. And the meat is supplied out to Strandhill and to Carrick. So we have a delivery run a couple of times a week. The salads that we're growing here, again, they all go into the restaurants, and they're harvested. We're harvesting 3 times a week. And that's just getting picked up in our delivery van and dropped to either the production kitchen or to the two restaurants. So we're on the N4. So our two restaurants, our production unit and our bakery and the farm are all kind of spread out along the sort of N4 corridor. So it's a very short kind of local. I think it's probably about 50 kilometers from Carrick to Strandhill. So it's all happening within that same kind of 50 kilometer radius, if you like.
Even within, I mean, I've been into one of your restaurants, even within the restaurant, you have a farm shop, you have a restaurant, And you also have a drive-through concept, isn't it? So you don't kind of stop at one concept. Like how or why are you branching out into the, all these areas?
The restaurant in Carrick on Shannon used to be a KFC. So we really like the fact that we've kind of done a bit of a reinvention of that kind of fast food concept. So we're still, our menu is still very much kind of fast food orientated. So it's burgers, it's fries, but it's burgers with our organic Dexter beef, our own homemade organic breads, our homegrown organic salads. So it's kind of, I suppose, a reinvention of that, and a sort of hopefully a kind of a makeover of that kind of food. And we're doing food very much with sustainability in mind. So, our produce from the farm is going to the restaurants, but we also source. It's not enough to fully supply the restaurant. So we also support source products and ingredients from other like-minded producers that we sell in the farm shop, but also on our menu. So all of the veg that we serve on the menu is organic. That's kind of one of our bottom lines. And obviously there's a very short growing season here in Ireland, and there's no way we could produce all of that ourselves. One of the biggest challenges actually has been about kind of trying to balance what we can physically do with our farm and our and running a restaurant and people's expectations, I suppose. So people, they want a tomato, a slice of tomato in their burger all year round. Tomatoes grow in Ireland from July to November if you're lucky. So it's kind of, over the last 10 years, we've had to kind of constantly be asking ourselves lots of questions about, okay, what can we do here? What can't we do? What's going to work? What's going to be commercially viable? And balance that with actually the ethos of the business, which is doing things as sustainably and environmentally consciously as possible. So with the veg, it's all organic all year round, but we import out of season from an organic veg distributor in the Netherlands who are sourcing their veg from European growers. But also one of the tenets of what we're doing is about this route to market for other people. So the restaurants are a route to market for our own farm, but they're also a route to market for other like-minded small producers as well. So we kind of think that works.
And was it through experience that you decided to go straight to market? I mean, was there a reason that you chose it? Because it's quite like it's there's a lot there to there's a lot of challenges, I'm sure. But what was
Well,
the kind of base or the reasoning behind it?
I think many of the people who are, well, some of the guys on this call, for example, might be farmers who have got to go to a mart or got to go to a factory, or there's only one route and that's it. And that's the bottom line. And sometimes you don't even know what you're going to get paid. You sort of, oh, this is what I get. Okay, right. And there's no choice. So I suppose we weren't comfortable with that sort of model. And I think the more control you have and the closer you can get to the end user or the consumer, and the closer they'll appreciate because they know where it's coming from, they'll know what they're getting, they'll trust what they're getting, and then you can get a better price for that and make your business more sustainable, because the businesses that are supplying the factories are not sustainable. They're not they don't they don't stand up on their own 2 feet, and without the subsidies and without the payments that people are getting, then people wouldn't be doing what they're doing.
Well, and the other side of that, one of the other kind of drivers for the idea of the business really was about that we knew when we came back to the farm that we wanted to be food producers, as opposed to just farmers, that we wanted to produce food here on the farm and feed it to our own family and eat it ourselves, and then have a surplus that we could sell direct to our kind of local community. I suppose getting a little bit back to the old days of Liam's family, who would have been, very much subsistence farmers growing their own food and having surplus to sell at the market. We really liked that idea, but recognize that to actually do that in real life in modern times is really, really difficult. So I suppose we kind of set ourselves that challenge.
I think it's quite an interesting challenge as well, because there's a public perception sometimes, and I could be wrong, you're in the cool face of it, that organic is priced at a certain premium, but whereas you're also kind of crossing that over with fast food. So your consumers are, maybe slightly different to what people stereotypically thought think an organic consumer is. Am I right in saying that, or am I off?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the really important things for us is that we wanted, and actually, again, a really tough challenge for us as a business is that we wanted the food we're producing to be accessible. That is, this is we're not in the business of supplying steaks to kind of Ashford Castle and getting a huge premium on the product. sometimes we might think unfortunately. But no, we wanted the food to be really accessible. We wanted the restaurants to be accessible. We wanted it to be a price point where, it's not, you're paying a little bit more than you would pay at the McDonald's, which has just opened across the road from the
But
Sinclair,
not
but not a
as
huge amount. Yeah, sorry.
like it's and one of the things that we want to make sure that people know is that the food that we're producing and the end product in the restaurants is not that much more expensive than McDonald's, and for what you're getting is actually good value. So that's just one of the points I wanted to get across.
Yeah,
No, and
absolutely.
I think it's really important, but how much education do you feel you need to do with your consumers? Is education part of your business,
A
or
huge, huge
have you
part of
got
it.
enough other
Yeah, it's actually
fingers in the
so
pie?
we sort of started this project 12 years ago, would you believe it? So we came back with the kids in 2012. And when we first started, we started with a little burger trailer actually that we took to festivals, and then we had a kind of a prototype, very tiny cafe and farm shop in Boyle. And the conversation has changed so much over the last 12 years. Like when we first started, you would say, "Oh yeah, we're organic farmers," and people would look at you and go, "Oh right, okay." they just, well, what's that all? Well, like, we're all, what's Ireland's all organic. And there wasn't really an, oh, paying €17 for a chicken, that's ridiculous kind of thing. It's really, really changed. I think people are much, much more conscious now of what they're eating, of where their food comes from. And that's really exciting to see. So to have been part of that journey of organic food in Ireland has been really, really rewarding. And like, we have amazing conversations with people coming to the restaurant every day who have been on their own kind of food journey. And really, for whatever reason, whether it's health reasons or starting a family or just general concern for climate change and what's happening on the planet at the moment, that they're really questioning where their food comes from and how it's being produced. So that's really encouraging to see, I suppose.
And before I move back away from the business and into the farming, and just one, you did touch on it, and I think it's quite an important thing. So if you're, on the farm, you're producing your meats, your lettuce leaves and whatever, and then, but your consumer is expecting a certain thing from you every week, and matching that, like you say, you sometimes have to import to match it, of course. Is it a challenge for your farm? Because your business is expanding, you've now got Strandhill as well as Carrick. Have you found it a challenge to meet your demand of your consumers?
Not really, actually. I think we probably had we knew to some degree what our production needed to be for the two restaurants. And so from the farm side of it, I was gearing up for that. And we had, we have plenty of, yeah, well, we've got 120 hectares, and so we have the capacity to do quite a lot. But we also knew that we wanted to work with other local farmers, so it seems to have worked out okay. Now, I'm not saying that's through any great planning or anything like that. We've been fortunate so that we seem to have a good, I have a good pipeline, and you kind of have to plan in advance. So I'd have guys that I work with that I would buy their organic Dexter weanlings, for example, but they might be 8 or 9 months old when I get them. But I might keep them then for until they're 2.5, nearly 3 years of age. And so I have that pipeline coming. So far it's worked out fine, and we haven't reached that kind of critical capacity level on the beef. The polytunnels, we seem to have managed that okay as well. We have, we brought on extra capacity there when we opened the new restaurants. So we don't want to do everything. So we want to do what we do and want to do it really well. And we do want to work with other people. So my organic Dexter kind of club, if you like, I work with the same guys, and we've kind of got the guys I work well with, and we all trust each other, and it kind of works out pretty good. So but it doesn't mean that, when we add on new things on the menu, that we don't source other things from other people.
And that actually is where the challenge is. It's not so much in terms of our own production, like what we can produce ourselves in terms of Liam saying, the salads and the beef, we're at the right scale for that. It's when we're trying to source other products from other producers that you just hit really surprising challenges. So we started off, like I say, our vegetables are always organic. So when we started, we said, okay, chips, we need to make organic chips. They need to be Irish potatoes. We've got our preparation kitchen. We set up a little chip line there. And then we went to try and buy Irish organic chipping potatoes. And actually, they don't exist in Ireland all year round. So we've had to make little compromises along the way temporary compromises, hopefully, where there is perhaps just not the supply actually in existence in the country. So there aren't enough organic stall potatoes to get you through from kind of the last season, kind of March, April, through to the next, you know, July sort of late potatoes. You can't use, as we've tried and failed, you can't use salad potatoes for chips. So there's a good 4 or 5 months of the year where actually Irish organic potatoes just don't exist in the right enough quantity for us to make to make organic chips. So those kind of, so then what do we do? And those kind of questions have been a really, really interesting part of this project, because you're constantly working, you know, finding alternatives, working out solutions. How do you not compromise on the sort of ideals you started out with? But you need the business to be viable, it needs to be sustainable. And you know, people want really good chips, so you can't serve them.
And there's not many fast food joints without chips. So yeah, that's
really exactly. So that's been interesting.
And how important, I mean, obviously, when people are in your store or in your shops or whatever, they, you know, you do kind of mention that you're organic and stuff, but how important is it to your business, do you think, that you also have a lot of nature on your farm, or that you're nature friendly or any of that? Or is that
really, really important? I think, you know, a lot of the story that we try to tell in the restaurants is about where the food is coming. I think people, like I said, we have a lot of very environmentally aware customers, people who kind of seek us out because they can see that we share that ethos. So I think it's really important. But at the same time, you know, the nice thing about the food is that it's really simple and has broad appeal. Like everyone likes a burger. So I always tell a story about our last days in our little restaurant in Boyle. We had a really busy Saturday where in the morning we had a group of 30 farmers who came in for breakfast. And in the afternoon, we had a group of 25 yoga teachers. And it was really lovely that, you know, that the food has such broad appeal and the concept has such a broad appeal that actually there's the whole broad kind of spectrum of people that enjoy it, you know, whether it's families, older people, people from all walks of life. So that's really nice to see.
Yeah, it's kind of accessing, like you say, doesn't necessarily have to be the Ashford Castle people, it's accessing.
Yeah, and just another point, I suppose, we've talked a lot about organic, but like everything, we don't have everything, we're not this organic purists. Mm. It's just we have certain things that these are organic, but in terms of the restaurant, there are products that aren't organic, and our bakery, for example, as well. So a lot of the sweet things that we just can't get organic mm-hmm. products. So, but we have certain certified organic breads. And so, you know, if people come to the restaurant, they shouldn't be afraid that, oh, it's all organic and it's all really expensive. And that's not the way it works.
We're trying to do as much as we possibly can organic. And if it's not organic, then we'll question provenance. Or whether it's by welfare or, you know.
And if it's affordable.
And if it's affordable. That's the thing. People do need to be able to afford it as well. You know, people won't, you know, we did, again, another switch that we made early on. We started with organic chicken and then we had to switch to free range because the price of organic feed for meat birds, it's, you know, it's gone through the roof. And there's actually not that many people.
You can't get the supply.
There's not many people doing organic meat birds in Ireland, again. And so we switched to free range. And it just wouldn't have been affordable. We would have had to have charged like €20 for a chicken burger. And now we can charge £12.50 for a chicken burger. So it is that balance between what people can afford to pay, you know.
If a farmer came to you and was looking for advice on where to start with considering going from field to fork, what were the main things that you would suggest from from the farm side of things and where to start?
Oh
and
God!
What to look out for?
I would say, don't do it.
Okay, fair enough.
Are you crazy? No, I suppose I would. I wouldn't be able to help myself. I'd say, where are you based? Who is your market? Where have you got somewhere where people? There's enough people to buy what you're thinking of. Have you got a premises where you can sell this stuff from? And is that rent viable, and is it a good location? They're actually really key questions, because you know most farmers are really, really smart guys and they're very versatile and they're very resilient, and they can produce, and I, you know, no worries about guys being able to produce for the enterprise. But the real kind of the, I think a part of that, they'll have no problem with that. And they shouldn't be afraid of the other side, but the other side is important. What the location has to be right, and the concept, and how that's engineered, and how that's executed, and that definitely farmers should not be afraid of it, but it just has to be thought through, and it has to be, the boxes have to be ticked. But you know, one of the things, I went to courses when we first came back and from the UK, and like butchery courses from Chagas and all this. And basically, I was like, what the hell is going on here? It was farmers being told that they can't do stuff. They were told, you're a producer, you good lad yourself, you keep producing. Don't you worry about this butchery side of things. We'll sort that, get a butcher, he'll do all that for you, and da da da. Get the professionals. But actually, I was there to learn about it. I was there to know how to do it. I was there to learn how to employ someone, and so I knew what to tell them to do. And I just felt that we farmers need to be more confident about what they can do, because they can do a lot. And any farmers who can survive in this environment, with the weather and with the way the pricing is structured and the way the market's structured, I've got like huge respect for many guys and women that can farm and survive in this climate.
Fair enough. And Justina, what would your kind of main things to consider more on the business side of things? So people have a product, they potentially have a good butcher, or if it's needs that or whatever. Taking it to the next step, what do you think is important?
I think like one of the things I think you touched on it there earlier in the conversation. We do our, maybe start with one thing. Like we are doing a lot. We're doing a lot of different things, and we're kind of, the farm to restaurant thing, because we wanted to use as much of our own produce as possible. We're kind of involved in lots of different steps along the food chain. But I'm often envious of people who kind of have a product which they have developed.
The honey guy.
Yeah, like a guy who supplies us with our honey. Like he just does honey and he does it amazingly well and knows everything there is to know about bees and he's an expert in honey. Or our friend who roasts our coffee for us in the restaurant. So she is a coffee roasting guru. She's amazing and she roasts our coffee for us freshly a couple of times a week. And our Tessa coffee, it's fabulous. So I think specialism is probably an easier place to start. So have a think about what you can produce on your farm. And it might be. It might be food, or it might be, have you got something special on your farm? Could it be farm visits? Could it be an experience? Think about a product that you can do and maybe start small, maybe start with that one thing, and then you never know where that's going to take you after that.
Yeah, interesting. If anyone has any questions for Justina and Liam, pop them in the chat box there, and I can help ask them. So Liam, you mentioned that you went on some Chagas courses when you came back. Where, in terms of what you guys do now, where would you look to for support and advice?
Yeah, that's a huge question, and I think it very there's so many different there's a lot of support out there, in terms of the leader side of things. Even the organic grants for any organic farmers, there's really strong organic grants. Now, we haven't been very good at availing of that, of the grants, but there are grants out there. And I think it's important that you follow what you want to do rather than following the grant as well. And if what you want to do and that fits in with the grant, then that's brilliant. But sometimes people are kind of, oh, there's a grant for this, I'll do that, whatever. But if there's support there, then I think it's relatively easy to find out about those things, through
Local enterprise
the local
office.
enterprise office, the leader program, and the organic guys, for the organic grants. So yeah, I think the supports are there. The government supports are there, definitely. What I think is more difficult to find is if you're doing stuff, say if you're even hens, free range hens around the farm, or moving hens around the place, like there's so much red tape involved in that. And then, and there is no one kind of place to go for that. You just have to talk to different people who are doing it. And that's what I find works well, is pick up the phone, send someone an email, ask the question to someone who's already doing it and doing it pretty well. And normally people are very happy to help. And I've always been happy to help anyone who's contacted us, within reason, and to spend 20 minutes on the phone and say, look, don't do that, or they'll probably do it anyway. But and so there's the people who are already doing it, are doing similar something similar, finding out about their journey and how that worked.
Yeah, that's a really good point, I think. And like I know that Farming for Nature, we offer a mentorship program, and it's been probably our more successful program is that kind of farmers going onto other farmers' land and giving them a hand or whatever, Sorry, Justina, what do you think in terms of good places for
Yeah,
support
no,
and
exactly what
advice?
you've been saying there. And I think networks like that, like Fund for Nature, the Organic Trust as well, kind of looking up, and social media, actually. I was going to say your question around starting a business. Social media is such a huge opportunity that wasn't really there 10, 15 years ago. And, to get on social media and to tell your story and to tell the story of the product. And it's actually really easy now to make contact with your customer base in a way that it wasn't when we were young. So,
Yeah, no, that.
if you're not a social media expert yourself, then if you have a member of the family that is, one of our daughter is great on TikTok, for example, become familiar with that as a tool. I was just going to say that there's Liam said LEADER has a food initiative. There's a whole tranche of funding there for food program, for food projects. The organic farming scheme. There's a kind of capital investment scheme for on farm and off farm organic processing if you're in organic farming. And then Fulcher Island at the moment have
That's a good one, yeah.
there's a big tranche of funding there which has just opened up. They're actively looking. I think the deadline is June for people who have eco-tourism type projects. They're really, really excited about on-farm accommodation, sustainable accommodation, the kind of lodges and cabins, that idea. So there's a lot of funding available
Are
right
you
now.
moving into this
There
area too?
you go.
What have been your main challenges along the way? What have you been your big learning? Kind of, what are your big lessons that you've learned on the farm, say, and then we can go on to the business more side of it. What are your biggest
I
learned on
think
the farm?
the big learning on the farm for me, I suppose, has been do what you can do well, and do it really well. And if you can do it to a bit of scale and have the right equipment or the right housing, so when we very started off first, we would have had we experimented with free range pigs, and I really, really enjoyed having the pigs. And
Organic pigs,
Yeah, they were fantastic. But just the management of the pigs, and to do pigs well, you need to do them in numbers. So if when you need, a good number of sows, and if you have a good number of sows, then you're into that management of those sows, and they have to be done really well, and you can't afford to not have sows in pig. Et cetera, et cetera. So do the things you can do really well, and have the right equipment and the right housing, and try and do it to a little bit of a scale.
I think similarly to what Liam's talking about there is we started off very, very ambitious. We had a kind of an idea that we wanted to sort of do everything and try everything. And I think maybe just kind of tempering, not biting off more than you can chew, really. keeping it really focused, starting small and kind of
How's that working out for
building gradually, yes.
you? It's great. It's really amazing. So we've had a few questions coming in here. Mary Cannon's asked, very interesting talk, amazing achievement to have so many enterprises. Can I ask how many people you employ and how do you manage that? Christina, maybe you?
About 65 at the moment across all the different businesses. Yeah, so
Okay. And how do you manage that?
it's kind of fun and challenging. So people is the kind of best bit about what we're doing, but it's also the hardest bit, because that's 65 people who that need support. They need to know if they're doing what needs to be done. They need to be making a contribution. So kind of channel, kind of managing all of that can be challenging. 65 people have other stuff going on as well. It's not the job, so it is. It's full on. I mean, I think that we really enjoy it. So we both of the restaurants would have, we have a kind of a senior management team that are really strong, and we're really lucky to have them on board. So that to have that get, and it's taken us a while to get that structure right. Yeah, it's yeah, and communications then. So we have it's we're kind of multi-site, so we use technology quite a lot as well. So we have a kind of a Microsoft Teams for the business where we can kind of we'll talk to each other, we use various apps. So we use something called Bizimply to kind of manage payroll and manage time cards and all that kind of stuff. So there's a bit of technology underpinning it all as well, to kind of just manage that number of people and that many conversations that go on in the business every day.
Yeah, no, it's really important actually that make sure that the balls aren't juggling too much and that you can get help like that. Here, Amalong has asked, thanks for the talk so much so far. What would you say is your main source of income, and would the farm be self-sufficient without the restaurant?
Income, what is that? So, income, would the farm be self-sufficient? I suppose between the payments that the department that we get, I suppose the farm would be making a little bit of money. And I don't think it would be, the farm would be that much different. Except we wouldn't have the income from possibly as much on the market garden side, but I think the farm would be the same. We would sell our beef through you know some to some other the brave herders or through ABP Nina or something like that, and get an okay price for it. So we have an income from the bakery is provides an income as well. So I'm not sure if that question sort of. Yeah, if the restaurants weren't there, we'd have the farm, and the farm would we wouldn't be it wouldn't be a huge income, but it would be positive, I think, and the bakery would be positive as well.
And what breed of what are the organic pigs?
Well, we don't do the pigs anymore, but they were mixed breeds, mixed kind of breeds with some commercial strain in them, like Duroc, mostly Duroc or
But the, when we started out, we had a really two really lovely breeding sows. We had a Tamworth called Dolly and a Berkshire called Rosie, and that's where we started. And so that was when we didn't even have a shop or anything. We were just kind of finding our way around the farm and getting to, kind of learning the ropes, I suppose. But the first piglets that we had on the farm, that was a really exciting day.
Yeah, the pigs were
They were
fantastic, but
gorgeous
it's
too.
very hard to manage them on heavy clay soils. We kind of experimented with them, and if we were going to do them, I knew we would have to do them on a bigger scale. But it just wasn't. It wasn't kind of.
Wasn't viable for
Wasn't
you, was
viable.
it?
I think they work well in a kind of in an arable rotation, and we wouldn't have had the land at that time to do it. And even now, I probably would we wouldn't do it in the on the other farm, because I know you'd have to do it to scale, and we wouldn't be able to afford to do that with the price of organic feed, and with yeah, it wouldn't have worked.
Fair enough. Heather Jem directly messaged me, but I think she meant message everyone. Looking back, if you wanted to change anything you had done, what would you do differently?
Wow, that's a really good question. Probably not try and concertina as much as we did in such a short time, because it was the whole COVID thing. We had planned to open one restaurant and then another, but the way it worked out, we were delayed in one restaurant, and then we had to fast forward the other restaurant because it had the drive-through. So we ended up doing way too much within sort of
Very short space of time.
within two to like 3 years. We've got like two fully kitted out restaurants, the design of them, the design of the brand. We've got the restaurants open. We've got to hire 65 people, and we've got our bakery up and running. We've got our production kitchen up and running. We've got the farm kind of systems up and running. All the tech and all just the systems for the restaurants and the finance side of it, like all that within
Two
two
and
and
a
a
half
half
years, yeah.
years. Was totally ridiculous.
Well done. You've done seem to have managed to pull it off. Liz McCauley has asked a few questions, so I start with the first one. So this is super interesting and impressive. Thank you. Did you start out with certified organic for the market garden specifically, or did you decide that it would be beneficial to go to organic afterwards?
No, we kind of came with the idea that we wanted to be an organic farm. So that was part of the when we moved back to the farm, we sort of knew that that was the road we were.
She's talking about the market garden.
So organic farm in general. So we were already organic when we actually started the market garden. So it was always going to be organic.
And then is supplying the two restaurants enough in terms of the market for the market garden, or do you rely also on farm shops?
Actually, most of what we're producing in the market garden, we're really only growing salads, herbs all year round, and then in the summer we do a selection of vegetables, tomatoes, and cucumbers, and courgettes, and beans, that kind of thing, just to have it in the rotation. All of that veg, actually, we only really sell in the shops. And then the salad, we sell in the shops. We do salad bags in the shops. We do kale. We do spinach in the shops. And then we also the salad goes into the kitchen as well for the burgers and as the base for our kind of bowls of salad. So, what was the question again?
I think
Yeah,
you
so the restaurants is enough. Yeah, exactly. So it's between the shops and the shops are in the same building as the restaurant. They're all on the same site. So everything that goes from the market garden goes either to the shop or to
Yeah,
the restaurant.
sometimes we get lots of things, and you know the hens are very happy to munch through most of it.
Yeah, fair enough. And also her final question, I'd like to know how you've found the acre scheme so far.
I think it's great when someone gives you money. We got a check there for both the acre schemes for both Justina's farm and my farm. So for us, it was kind of a no-brainer because we have ticked the rare breed livestock box, and we both have a riparian kind of zone that was suitable for that. So for very 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 little work, that we were able to. I had to move some cows over to Justina's farm at the start, but for not too much work, we were able to tick a lot of boxes for the acre scheme. So I'm not going to argue with it.
Yeah, fair enough. Paul Ford has asked, do you see any land deficiencies that there is where I suppose where there is minimal artificial fertilizer?
Yeah, look, if you're not doing something, then farming organically will take its toll. We have a lower stocking rate. I think on Justina's farm, we go between one, I think 1.7 to 2 livestock units per hectare. And on our farm here, which is a bit heavier and lots of woodland and all that, so it's probably less, a good bit less than that, so less than 1.5. So we have our composted farmyard manure, and so that's the kind of the biggest thing that we have, and we lime fairly regularly, put out limes, and I have my own kind of little grazing kind of craziness that I do, but I don't know, it's a sort of a bit of a regen, and it kind of works okay. So I kind of leave the cattle in. I don't put them in until the grass is quite high, and then I take them out pretty quickly, and there's always trampled, so it seems to work and it seems to regenerate itself. So we're not terrible on soil sampling, but we're always moving the hens around has been absolutely brilliant. So anywhere where the hens have been, it's just been fantastic. So
They're in, just to explain, they're in a mobile tunnel, that can be, it's on skids, so you can kind of move it around.
now there are restrictions, so I mean where you can move it because of this whole government department of the poultry people come out and inspect us and all that, so we're not supposed to do a lot of things with them.
Fair enough. And Emma Jem has asked, what are you most excited about for the future of organic farming?
Like, we believe it's the way forward. I mean, it is a growth area in Ireland. It's still a really tiny percentage of the farmland in the country, but it's growing all the time. I think they had the highest ever intake of farmers into the organic farming scheme this year, which is really exciting to see. So and yeah, I think there's just, like I was saying before, I think there's actually just more and more, the consumer demand for it is growing, I think.
As long as it's affordable,
Yeah, as long
that's
as
the
it's
thing.
affordable, yeah.
So, where you have something that's organic, and say organic flour, we import 14 tons of organic flour every few months, and it's not expensive, but I know that that flour hasn't been touched by about, is there 15 sprays that the wheats and the barleys and that the wheat gets on a conventional farm, how many sprays does it get? You got the seed dressing, you've got all the pest control, you've got all the different sprays for all the rusts and everything else. And like, I mean, do I trust people to say that that's okay? I don't.
Yeah, no, it's detrimental in many ways. A few people have said Goromia Mahagut and all that kind of stuff, and thanks and impressive. And Mary Cannon has said she missed the name of your restaurants, and they're called Honestly in Carrigonshannon and in Strandhill, isn't it? That's where people can visit you.
Honestlykitchen.ie is the website.
I've had just one or two last questions. You mentioned earlier that there's a young fa you have a family, and presumably you're creating a legacy for them. How does that make you feel about how you farm your land, that you know that there's another generation looking in at you and potentially, coming after you on the land? Especially if you've had ancestors on your land for nearly 400 years.
Yeah,
No
but
pressure.
if they only saw what I was doing now, they were like, "What the hell is he at?" So, yeah, look, I think it's about trying to look, people will make their own decisions, and you know, if our kids get involved and take that side of it, oh, you kind of can't mitigate for what they will do or not do, but you can do the you can make the best decisions that you can make, bearing in mind what you think is coming down the tracks weather-wise and environmentally wise. So that's why we're kind of looking into the agroforestry now, and that's a kind of a long-term play in terms of that could be you know, how long is that? It's a long time, and it, you know, in the history of the world, it's just a crop, but from our point of view, it's a lifetime. So yeah, we're looking into making some of those decisions, and we hope that they would kind of make life easier for the next generation that are going to farm that land, or make it sense for them. So it's something that we're you obviously think about, you know, but you kind of have to make the decisions based on what you think yourself like.
And it's really how we started with all of this. You know, where really the idea for this came about when we were starting to plan for a family and became, you know, more interested in health and nutrition and fertility and all of those things. And then when the kids came along, what we were actually feeding them, and also what kind of planet they're going to grow up into. You know, that there's it's such a worrying time, really. You know, in terms of what's happening in terms of climate change, producing food that we wanted to eat ourselves, that we wanted to feed our kids, and also looking to see is it possible to do things a different way, I suppose.
When you say you're employing 65 people, but you're, in fact, you're actually only employing two on your farm for all of it. That's very impressive as well. Like, there's a lot to be said for both of you on what you've managed to achieve both inside the farm gates and outside. So thanks so much for sharing us. I know that we possibly have a farm walk planned with you in August, I think. So all our farm walks are starting to go up online. We have about 20 planned over the next few months. If anyone would like to go on any of our farm walks, including on Justina and Liam's farm, please sign up. There's only 25 places, and I know that they'll book out fast. Thank you so much for everything that you've shared with us this evening. It's been really, really interesting and really inspiring. And I look forward to visiting your farm one day and also tasting your delicious food again. I've been very lucky to have tasted it so far. So if anyone's passing through Carrick-on-Shannon or on Strandhill in County Sligo, do drop into their farm restaurants. I'm sure they'd love to have you there.
Thank you
Take
so much for
care.
having us.
Thank you very much. It's,
Really appreciate
yeah,
it.
love talking to you.
If you like this podcast, please rate, review, and share with your friends. If you'd like to get in contact with us, then email me, Bridget Barry, on info@farmingfornature.ie or contact us on all the usual social media platforms. This podcast series is supported by the National Parks and Wildlife Service and the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine. Thanks for listening.